Okay, so in general, we're going to be learning teachings of Rav Hudner, Torahs of Rav Hudner. We're going to start with Shabbos. Hopefully, start tonight already with Shabbos. And then we'll continue with Hashem a few weeks before Hanukkah. We'll move to Hanukkah. And then after Hanukkah, some more Shabbos and other general topics will carry us through until, say, about a month before Purim. Then we'll switch over to Purim. And then after Purim, we have 2 weeks of Pesach Bezrat Hashem. I just wanted to speak a little bit in just general terms, introduction, to have a better, some kind of a sense of Rav Hudner's background, but not long, not to bore you with numbers, dates, facts, too much, just a little bit, to put things in historical context. I think that having some kind of a background as to where Rav Hudner's coming from is very important. It's connected to Rav Hudner's whole outlook. He himself once said, in addition to the set, again, you know, you're familiar with the set of Pachad Yitzchak on the blue set on the second shelf there from the top, underneath the Rambam, next to Making of a Gadol, to the left of Making of a Gadol. Okay? So you see that each volume basically is on a different Chag in general terms. You have Shabbos and Sukkot is together. There's another volume of Sukkot of Mamari Pachad Yitzchak. There's also a separate volume of letters of Rav Hudner, which are very interesting. And I mentioned that just to be familiar. And specifically, now at one point, Rav Hudner has a letter where he's talking about his coming to Eretz Yisrael. We'll run through Rav Hudner's background right away. So in that, we'll mention that he came at a certain point. We'll mention the context, but he came to Eretz Yisrael. When he came to Eretz Yisrael, he writes about the fact that he doesn't understand those people that come to Eretz Yisrael and right away lock themselves into one specific place without traveling traveling around Eretz Yisrael to try to get to know Eretz Yisrael first. And I think that is indicative of Rav Hudner's outlook. There are different, in modern psychology over the past few years, there's been more and more study, discussion about the two sides of the brain. The right side of the brain and the left side of the brain. Abstract and concrete and different functions. Okay, the left side of the brain is more concrete, logical, specific. The right side of the brain is connected to imagination, to associative thinking, let's say seeing it, let's say pictures, as opposed to logic in math equations. Because there are different minds, the whole mind, the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain, have different minds have different strengths. You can have a person who is a math genius and has a terrible sense of direction. Just like a terrible, sometimes embarrassing. It can be very forgetful. I mean, that idea of an absent-minded professor. You know, that heard of Professor Alman? Professor Alman, who we knew a few years ago, a religious Jew living in Yerushalayim. You guys take chairs, there's some kind of a rack should be around. Zev can show you where to clean up the chairs. I'm just getting started. So Professor Alman won a Nobel Prize recently, a few years ago. He lives in Yerushalayim. He's originally American, lives in Yerushalayim. His son learned here in Shalavim and was killed in the first Lebanon War in 1982, Shlomo Amon. Very, very special. Very, very special personality, Shlomo Amon. So, in any case, Professor Amon won a Nobel Prize, and his wife mentioned, told over, that once, this is an example of this kind of the two sides of the brain, and once Professor Amon was leaving the house, and his wife asked him to take out the garbage. On his way, he's going out to work, going to the university. So, as he was going out, his wife asked him to take out the garbage, and later on, hours and hours later, I mean, it sounds like you can't believe it, but I heard this from him, actually. He came here to Shalavim to speak, and beforehand, we were hanging out a little bit together. And hours and hours later in the day, in his office in the university, he looks at the side of the room, and the a bag of garbage was there in his office, and he had thrown out his briefcase in the garbage outside his house on his way to the university. So he's a genius, Professor Alman. He could pass this around as well, back to the guys. Professor Amon is a genius, but again, the different sides of the brain. And there's one kind of a brain that is focused on a specific task in front of it, let's say solving that math problem, or here in the context that we're speaking about as far as Rav Hudner, the person who just comes to be focused on exactly what they're doing, and the context, the larger picture, they don't really relate to. The picture they just put up in yeshiva in the lobby, I was standing with one of the other rabbis in yeshiva looking at that, you know which picture I'm talking about? The bird's eye view of Shalavim, the aerial shot of Shalavim. So, personally, for me, I see things in pictures. So right away, in seeing that picture, I had a sense of where everything is. And this other Rebbe was looking at the picture together, and he said, "Wow, it's a really cool picture, but I just have no sense. It doesn't do anything for me to help clarify what is where." He said, "Just like my brain doesn't work that way. This doesn't." For me, it's like, now it's crystal clear. You see every pathway, how to connect the point, and it's crystal clear. Another point, okay, it's a nice picture, but it's not any more clear for me. Okay? And you said that example as well, the sense of direction. That's definitely a function of the brain. And a person can have a great sense of direction and a poor memory, and again, within all of the different ways that the brain functions. And I'm emphasizing this because of the fact that I think this limud that we're now immersing ourselves in of Rav Hudner's Torah, it's a different kind of a limud. A different kind of limud than I think than we've usually encountered. It's you mentioned back in Elul that they say what the it's a kind of machshava acrobatics, developing ideas in an abstract way. It's not. As I mentioned that in Elul, they say that what the Chazon Ish, the halachic acrobatics that the Chazon Ish pulls off, and what the acrobatics that the Chazon Ish pulls off in the realm of halacha, the Chazon Ish, let's say, is an example of pilpul, of heavy pilpul within the realm of halacha, bring different logical points together to explain ideas in Gemara and halacha. So Rav Hudner performs those acrobatics within the realm of machshava. A different kind of an angle, a different perspective, expressing ideas within all of Shas. Shas is made up of two parts. There's halacha and agada. You can call this also within Torah itself. It's the line and between the lines. Or it could be referred to as the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Halacha is the letter of the law. What exactly you have to do. And the world of halacha and the vast majority, the vast majority of Shas is made up of discussions within that realm of halacha, of the law, of what you have to do, what the law is, in whatever case, whether it's connected to Bezdin, whether it's halacha l'maisa, or for us right now, or not halacha, but in Hilchas Shabbos, halacha l'maisa, or within laws that right now are not halacha l'maisa, but that is connected to what specific of what you do, action. That's that world of halacha, as opposed to the letter of the law, as opposed to agada, which is giving over the spirit of the law, the between the lines. Rav Shachter brings down in I believe this is in a footnote in Nefesh HaRav, Rav Shachter's book about Rav Soloveitchik. He is writing about in addition to the amazing, phenomenal, mind-blowing shiurim called daily shiurim in Halal Masechta in Lumbus that Rav Soloveitchik gave. Rav Soloveitchik was also a genius within this realm of giving over the spirit of the law in drushas, amazing drushas of Rav Soloveitchik, tshuva drushas that he used to give. So after one of his, Rav Shachter describes that after one of his tshuva drushas, one of his talmidim, Rav Shusheim, of Zerubbabel Shusheim, I had the privilege of meeting Rav Shusheim. Rav Shusheim was a Rebbe in YU and I was there. And Rav Shusheim's grandson actually learned here. And two grandsons learned here in Shalavim. The second one is actually named Zerubbabel after his grandfather. So after this tshuva drasha, Rav Shusheim ran over to his Rebbe, to Rav Soloveitchik. Wow, Rebbe, that was amazing. Wow, where did you get that from? It's like mind-blowing ideas. So Shachter writes that Rav Soloveitchik looked at him almost sternly and says, Zerubbabel, why don't you get so excited about my Gemara Shiur? Well, why are you so excited now? So Rav Shusheim answered back, within the Masechta, within the realm of Halacha, all the classic sugyas, there are so many svarim filling up shelves and shelves in the Beis Medrash. There's so many discussions about the ideas, but even here in this idea, this is like completely new. Where is it from? You don't have a whole sugya filled with many different approaches within whatever idea it was, again, within this new way of looking at tshuva that Rav Soloveitchik was speaking about. So Rav Soloveitchik heard the response of Rav, and then Zerubbabel, Yeshiva Bach Zerubbabel Shusheim, and answered back and said to him, Zerubbabel, not only did my father teach me how to read the lines, my father also taught me how to read between the lines. The halasugas of halacha, again, that's the line. That's exactly the what you do. What the halacha is, again, be mafabal, different ways of understanding that end up influencing halacha, all the different aspects connected to what the halacha is, and then the what you do. But this other realm, call different things at different times. We're calling it agada, agadata, machshava, the spirit of the law. This is, again, developing a new idea in our Avodas Hashem connected to tshuva, machshava, understanding our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ideas within the Yamim Tovim, within Shabbos, that we're experiencing and not connected to specifically. What we're going to learn in this Yes, I'm tying it back now to this limud of Rav Huttner and Pachad Yitzchak. It's not a limud that you of halach l'maisa what you do. There isn't an action that afterwards you end up doing where it's expressed by action doing something different. It's how you experience a Shabbos differently because of what Shabbos means to you. The spirit of Shabbos, how you relate to it, how you relate to Chanukah, what does Chanukah mean to us? The meaning, the significance, the spirit of what Chanukah is, of what Purim is, what Pesach is. So a little bit a specific background before we get to some actual limud. Rav Huttner learned in Slabatka. Mentioned before that, from a very just throughout these days, very quickly. Age 15, he learned in Lomja. Okay, so he was born in 1906, and age 15 learned in Lomja until 1921, and then he was in Warsaw for 6 months. And then he was in Slabatka. We mentioned that's the main yeshiva that Rav Huttner is affiliated with, is Slabatka. When we think of Rav Huttner, we could say was Slabatka par excellence. Slabatka is famous for what? Again, you could speak about it for a long time, but al regel achas, Slabatka is famous for what? And what was the ideas within that, within the Muslim movement, the message, the what?
Act in a higher way.
A higher, godless Adam, the greatness of man, acting in a higher way. Maybe we can hear, again, if this is a repeating for many of you, but just that it should be crystal clear to everyone what we mean by that, I think. And there are many different explanations, so my take on it is that when we're trying to maximize our potential, there are different paths, there are different tools to be used. So when we start talking about godless Adam, it's thinking big. As I say, dare to dream. Think big. Make goals for yourself. Don't sell yourself short. Okay? That's what Slabatka was very, that effect, even a concrete expression of it was even then in the way that you dress. Slabatka brought to the yeshiva world even a classy kind of a way that a yeshiva student dresses. Because Chazal say, Man Malchi Rabbanan. Who are the Malachim? Who's nobility? Rabbanan. B'nai Torah. So you have to dress a certain way, a certain nobility. And that impact, that influences your state of mind. Often. Okay? That's a certain part of how we can become bigger. Sometimes it can be just an example of another side. And just using it as an example, Navardik, another school of thought within the Musar world, Dafka, focused mostly on breaking the ego. And sometimes sometimes these clash, because sometimes you're trying, and thinking about greatness, you're trying greatness of how much you can achieve, you dafka have to fuel the fire of the ego. Hopefully in a healthy way. It can be distorted, like everything in life. Every attribute can be distorted. You can have too much of it, too little of it. An ego that's fueled too much can end up being a bloated ego. Person can become a bal gaiva. That's a risk here. And sometimes, again, if you talk about within the yeshiva world, a kind of a poking fun or attacking, that would be the where Slabatka made fun of, insulted by, you know, like they're too full of themselves. Why not, again, if there's a distortion? In a healthy manner, though, again, you could think big. Think it brings along a sense of vision, of responsibility. Okay, within Navardik, they focused more on breaking the ego. And often to achieve more, we can't, sometimes we sell ourselves too short because we don't think big in a big enough way. We don't set goals. We don't set the bar as high as it can be. Sometimes we sell ourselves short because we create a certain mold for ourselves, and we operate according to what others expect from us, almost. And we don't rock the boat at all. We're not gutsy enough to go out there and do something that we think is right, even if we think something is right, because of what will they say. I could probably, the classic example within the Vedic I don't even know if this actually happened, but it's always mentioned in the concept of Navaradika, as if it happened, is that the Navaradika yeshiva boys would go into a hardware store and ask for ice cream, to be laughed out of the store, so that they become desensitized. They don't just operate according to what people say. Okay, they're laughing at me. That helps me get used to doing things that I think really should be done, and not, I don't care if people are laughing at me. Okay, that's just but Rav Hutner was real. To come back to Rav Hutner, Rav Hutner was godless Adam, thinking big, majestic, very majestic. That's how he held himself throughout his life. And the roots here are in Slabodka. Slabodka, in 1925. What happened in the world in the yeshiva of Slabodka in 1925?
And moved.
They had to move to
New York.
To Eretz Yisrael. To where in Eretz Yisrael? Very relevant to the news right now. To Hebron. You've heard of Hebron Yeshiva in Yerushalayim?
Yeah.
Hebron Yeshiva in Yerushalayim originally was in Hebron. 1925. It was Slabodka. There were some laws under the government in Europe. Slabodka would have to make some changes there within the yeshiva. There were all kinds of decrees as far as the army and as far as secular studies and all kinds of other things. And the administration of the yeshiva got together and said, "This is becoming too problematic," and they planned this move to Eretz Yisrael. And okay. The heads of the Slabodka Yeshiva, meaning the Rabbeim of Rav Hutner, you could say the main influence of Rav Hutner when he was in Slabodka was the altar of Slabodka. The altar of Slabodka, not literally older, but he was, even though altar means older, but he wasn't an old man at all then. But it's like the senior person in the yeshiva. And there was also the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein. Okay, the altar was a kind of, mashkiach, he would say, mashkiach kind of a figure. He had a very strong impact on the educational outlook of the Talmidim in the yeshiva, and help cultivate their Avodas Hashem. So they were the heads of the yeshiva. In any case, the yeshiva came to Hebron, and it was in Hebron, we said around 1925. Until when were they in Hebron? Until Tarpat, until the pogrom, the rioting, the pogrom in Hebron. 24 yeshiva guys from the Hebron, Slabodka, originally from Slabodka, Hebron yeshiva were killed in that. In the riot, in the pogrom, in Hebron. Yeshiva closed down 1929 and moved to Yerushalayim. And then first to Geula, that's a Hebron Geula, and then ended up overflowing, and there's Hebron Givat Mordechai, two Hebrons in Yerushalayim. Rav Hutner left a little bit before this pogrom and went back to Europe. At the time that he was here, during those years, approximately 4 years, he left a little bit before the pogrom. 3.5 years he was here in Hebron. During that time, Rav Hutner had a very close kesher with which Torah personality that was here in Eretz Yisrael? Rav Kook. Rav Hutner said a person again, sorry if I'm repeating some of the points here that I may have mentioned in Elul. You guys were around this table back in Elul. Ehuna said a person is built komot komot. First story, second story, different by different stages of life, different people, different experiences have an impact on who we become. So he said his first story, the first koma, was built by the altar of Slobodka, and his second story was built by Rav Kook. There's a little bit within, I think, a little bit. I'm not going to talk about the politics, not in Yeshivish politics or anything like that, but to note that within the Haredi world, there is a little bit of cover-up regarding this point, because it causes, I think for some people, it's complex that Rav Hutner in general was affiliated, Rav Hutner was part of the Haredi world. So for someone, and in that Haredi world, to have that close kesher, influenced very much by Rav Kook, is a little bit tricky. So it's usually not spoken about so much that Rav Kook had a strong influence on Rav Hutner. Maybe that's why I'm emphasizing it a little bit. But it's very much there. Agav, there isn't a biography on Rav Hutner, but there is. If you can ever get hold of it, I think it's out of print, but if you can get hold of it, if not, if it's in print and you can get hold of it, it's a fantastic book by Hillel Goldberg, Rabbi Hillel Goldberg, Between Berlin and Slobodka. Fantastic book about a number of different Torah personalities. Between Berlin and Slobodka. Okay? After Rav Hutner was in Hebron, he went back to Europe, he went to Warsaw, to the university. I'm sorry, to Berlin. To the University for Berlin for 4 months. He was in Warsaw beforehand, very briefly. After Warsaw, he was in the university in Berlin. And he had this book, Between Berlin and Slobodka, a number of different Torah giants. So there's a chapter on Rav Hutner. Okay? After, let's move it up a little bit quicker. Rav Hutner then, he said, went back to Europe. He was in Berlin. Who else? Which other famous Torah personalities were in university in Berlin around Be'erach at that time? Very good. Okay. And then Rav Hutner was in Kovna, in Warsaw. Kitzer, let's jump to, not from 1934 until the late 70s. Rav Hutner was in New York City. In New York, not New York City. In New York, in Brooklyn. Okay, New York City is usually specifically Manhattan, New York, but yes. Okay. So Rav Hutner was in Brooklyn. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of? Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. Okay, that was the Mamlacha, the kingdom of Rav Hutner. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. Raised many Talmidim in this spirit of godless Adam of Slobodka, and continued to develop this thought, and then within the world of Machshava, unique, very creative ideas that he gave over, in addition to the regular Shiurim, but what he's famous for, these creative Mamarim, and the Shurim within the Yamim Tovim and Shabbos that became Pachad Yitzchak. At the end of his life, last bunch of years, he moved to Eretz Yisrael, okay, and was Nifter here in Yerushalayim. I believe it's around 1980. Rav Hutner was a very creative thinker, we've been mentioning. He's a great example of what we have in this week's parasha. Famous idea that's bedeviv this point that I've been trying to convey, creativity and out of the box. Vayotze yotah achutza, giving over the spirit of the law, the between the lines, not only the lines, giving over the between the lines in the way that he understood, in his creative way, not falling into. I think this type of area of Torah is almost. It could be that there's something more conducive about it in terms of creativity. Because within the realm of halacha, there's the halacha there, it's kavua, the sugya, to get straight exactly what pshat is and what the halacha is. It's true that there's definitely a ton of room for creativity in explaining sugyas and halacha. Okay? But at the same time, when we're talking about developing a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and my relationship, how do I understand what Torah means for me, what Shabbos means for me? Okay, so it's in a way there's something about it one could suggest that is even more open, ripe for the expression of that creativity, not falling into a specific. Okay, this is exactly what Pshat is, and that's. An example of the Torahs that are given in HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls Avraham Avinu and he takes him outside, and he tells him to look up at the sky and count the stars, and so too, right? Just like you can't count them, so too you won't be able to count your children. What is he saying? Rashi brings what? What's the solution of go out? Get out of your. What's it, Tagninos? Get out of your. The model that you see in a. Tagninos is. Zodiac signs. A certain kind of set, according to the stars, this is where you are. There's a chachma of the stars, the study of the stars, that help you, right? Like people who hear, people that get carried away with what their mazel, according to the stars, is. Okay, and then sometimes people feel really locked into that. There's every Friday, some woman who gives on this show on the radio where he says they announce all the people who are born at this time, this is what kind of week they're going to have. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes along to Avraham Avinu and says, get out of the mold, get same it, he not just took him physically outside, but took him out of the box, out of the mold. Think, according to what you see, you're not going to have any children, but get out of the box. If Huttner used to say, right, and emphasizing his creative thinking, boxes are made for people. It's for when they're 6 feet under the ground. If someone is alive, and thinking, that you can't don't pigeonhole them. Don't pigeonhole me. Don't peg them. You can't put them in a specific place. If I said it were an idea, if I explained a suya last year a certain way, and now I'm explaining it a different way. So it's not a kasha. So I'm thinking about it in a new way. This is what it means to me now. Or like the Kotzker said, Zeh keli v'anveyu elokei ovi v'aramenu. First is Zeh keli v'anveyu. Afterwards is elokei ovi. What my father, the exact, I of course I come from someplace, I'm not born into a vacuum, and I have the tradition of my father. Of course I'm following the traditions, but my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't inherit, it's not passed over, my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu from my father. First, the Kotzker said, Zeh Keli. Keli is my God. My relationship with him, my religious experience. Afterwards, Elokei Ovi, also I connect with Varamena. Okay? So that is emphasizing this point of the newness, the creativity, new way of looking at things. And I'll give you one. A concrete example of this, Rav Yehoshua Hartman. I mentioned him earlier in the week. Rav Hartman is a Rebbe, Rosh Yeshiva in Hasmo in London. Rav Hartman was a Talmud of Rav Hudner. Rav Hartman told me, I heard this directly from Rav Hartman, he told me that he had a very close kesher with Rav Hudner. We used to speak to him freely about a lot of things. And one week he had a Rav Hartman, Yeshua Hartman, when he was a yeshiva bach, he had a friend and said to him, you know, you speak to Rav Hudner a lot, is there any way you think he could speak to, ask Rav Hudner if I could speak to him also? So Rav Hartman came to Rav Hudner and said, I have a friend who wants to speak with you. Is it okay if he comes to speak with the Rosh Hashiva? I said, fine, okay, tell him to come. The next week, Rav Hartman came, together with his friend, that he had asked if it's okay if he brings along to speak to Rav Hudner. They sit down at Rav Hudner's, in Rav Hudner's room, speaking to Rav Hudner. And the guy's speaking, and Rav Hudner is hardly saying anything. Like, almost uncomfortable, closed. And Rav Hartman is like trying to think, like, you know, almost acting as if, like, what are you doing here? Rav Hartman is trying to think, like, you know, I asked the Rosh Hashiva, what's going on? So afterwards, when he met Rav Hudner next, one on one, he said, Rebbe, is like, I had asked before, and if this other person comes, was there a problem? The Rebbe seemed, the Rosh Hashiva seemed uncomfortable, or something wrong. He said to him, I thought you wanted to know if this other guy can speak with me. And I said, yes, I'll speak with him. So I thought, I'll speak with him. But both of you sat there. I don't speak to you the way I speak to him, and I don't speak to him the way I speak to you. You're you, and he is who he is. How can I speak to both of you? Okay, if you're learning a sugi, you can learn the sugi over with two people together, three people together. But to have, quoting in Lashon HaKodesh, there's a Russian, in popular Israeli slang, there's a Rashi Teva called Sachnash. Anyone familiar with the term Sachnash? Yeah? Someone heard the term Sachnash? What is a Sachnash? No? Okay. Sachnash is Rashi Teva's for Sichat Nefesh. Sichat nefesh, like a real one-on-one, like what's going on, how's life, but in a real way, like, you know, like Pesach, what's going on, what's bothering you, what's good, what are you trying to accomplish, what are your dreams, what are your goals. I'm not going to have that. If I have that now with Pesach here in front of everyone, we're not going to get too far with 99% of people. Sometimes you'll have someone, I don't know, is just bubbling over and very most people, normal. So that's okay. So that was, you know, this kind of setting of what I was saying. That Rav Hudner was saying, I speak to you, this way, I speak to you, I speak to him, this way, I speak to him. Yeah. I have to be very careful. I said, I'm going to try to finish on time, so if I lose my credibility the first night, as far as finishing on time, I have a problem. So even though there's plenty more to talk about, Bavadai, regarding Rav Hudner's background, I want to let's get a little bit of a taste of Rav Hudner's writing. I don't think we're going to get to Shabbos tonight, but, and some of you may have seen this already, this is probably Rav Hudner's, it's one of the top three most famous letters of Rav Hudner. We saw one in Elul, that time that I took attendance in the Chug. So some of you saw in Elul, and some of you didn't. Some of you saw the Lose the Battle, Win the War letter of Rav Hudner. That's one of the top three most famous letters. This is also, this is the Broad Life, Double Life letter. Anybody familiar with the Broad Life, Double Life letter of Rav Hudner? Is there anyone? What? Okay, that's very exciting. That you're not familiar with it yet. I can be a shadchan and connect you with this, some special Jews, with a special letter of Rav Hudner. It's also a great example of a creative perspective of Rav Hudner. Again, it's referred to usually as the Broad Life, Double Life letter. I guarantee you'll hear about this at some point from Rav Yamir. Rav Yamir is famous for being a big fan of this letter. So I thought he may have even mentioned it in a Bayit Chaim with you guys in Elm. So I guess that will be coming at some point in the future. Rav Hunder is writing this letter to a student. Very good, Alex. How was that one? Very good. So this is another frustrated student for a different reason. Now it's to someone who was depressed because he wasn't, he was slipping up, messing up at certain times. Now is the lose the battle, win the war. This is someone who feels that he has a difficulty in juggling. How many of you juggle? How many of you juggle? Raise your hand if you juggle. Every hand in the room should be up. Because you're all juggling. Okay.
I got it.
You're juggling body and soul, and juggling your how much time you invest in yourselves and others, your relationship with friends and family and whatever it is, the now and the future and the past, juggling. We're all jugglers. Okay? So this is a guy who was having a difficult time juggling parts of his life. Parts of his religious life and parts of his life that don't express, the way he saw it, don't express religion. He's davening with a minyan in the morning, but going out to work then, like for example, if a person is a doctor, so he's in the morning with a minyan. He could be at a daf yomi shir, and then all of a sudden he's in the hospital and he's surrounded by people who are not religious. So he's in a law firm and he's just very fun. He doesn't feel religious expression, making tons of money in his law firm, but so he starts to feel like he's living a double life. I have my life as a Jew, and my life as just a person, not a Jew. So Rav Hunder writes, "Mikhtavcha lacha chazaratcha lechutz la'aretz higiani lanachon." I received your letter after you returned into chutz la'aretz. Ha'emet nitna le'yamer. The truth can be said. Ki arbe ne'aneti me'kriyat mikhtavcha zeh. This clock is 5 minutes fast. Okay, I enjoyed reading your letter. Hana'a zut samcha mishnei shoroshim. Two reasons, the two roots to why I had pleasure in reading your letter. One, first of all, Rav Hutner is someone who appreciates classy writing. As we'll see in the Torah, not just what he says, sometimes it's how he says it. It's almost a poetic, I think, probably some of that is influenced from Rav Kook, just like Rav Kook's writing. Speaking is very poetic, colorful, flowery. So he says, I appreciate the way that you wrote it. Secondly, you express yourself openly regarding the twists and turns inside your nefesh. And that's not something we find every day. Usually people put on, right, we're all actors. We all have our costumes, right? Yeah. Sometimes, you can have a Yeshiva Bacher costume. You can have a Rabbi costume. You can have some, right? On Shabbos, we have our Shabbos costume, and when we go swimming, we have the swimming costume. And we're all putting on. However, we're acting in whatever role we act according to the role. Getting people to open up about what's going on the inside is not so common. I'm saying that not in a critical way. That's how life works. That's how human nature. The challenges, the difficulties that you express in your letter, I think there's a mistake here. There's something wrong in your basic premise. הרושם הכללי היה מתקבל מדבריך הוא כי זוהי הנחה פשוטה אצלך. You think it's a given, it's simple, it's clear. כי secular career היא double life. Guess I don't have to translate that, right? למותר להגיד לך, it's superfluous for me to tell you, כי מעולם לא הייתי מסכים בשום אופן לדouble life. I would never give my askama, I would never agree, I would never give you my blessings to live your life in a way where you're living a double life as a hypocrite. Amnam, and here's the big aval, however, מי ששוכר לו חדר בבית לחיות בו חיי תושב, ושוכר לו עוד חדר במלון לחיות בו חיי אורח. The person is living in a life where he has a house and he has a hotel room. He's like always jumping back and forth. בוודאי שיש לו double life. Wait one second. Like, are you house life? Is this your home? You have a home, or are you here, or is this vacation? And you're living in the hotel. אבל מי ששוכר לו דירה בת שני חדרים, if you have a house with two rooms in it, one room is a kitchen and one room is in a bedroom. In the kitchen you cook, in the bedroom you go to sleep. So יש לו broad life, not double life. You're not living in a contradiction like a split personality. Like, who am I? Am I the cook? Am I the eater? Who is the real me? Am I an eater or am I a sleeper? And I have some kind of identity crisis, and I can't go on living like this, two lives as an eater or a sleeper. An eater or a sleeper. No, there's no problem. It's a broad life I have. Part of my life is eating, part of my life is sleeping. So that is, so too, Zuchrani, שביקרתי פעם בירושלים בבית החולים של דוקטור ולך שליטה, which is Shari Tzedek Hospital in Yerushalayim. וראיתיו כשהוא נגע, you saw כשהוא ניגש לחולה, he went to the doctor went over to the patient that he was about to perform surgery on and asked him his name so that he can daven for him, the doctor, the surgeon, that he can daven for him that he should have a refuah shlema. And he asks, is that a double life? Well, it's a broad life. He's a doctor and he's studying medicine. He's going to perform the surgery and he's going to do the best job and he's going to be completely focused on the surgery. And at the same time, he realizes this other dimension, the spiritual dimension. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved and he davens that he should have a refuah shlema. That's the line you see in the middle. Amiras perek tehillim l'shlomo shel chola al yedei harofe ha'omed la'asot ha'tanituach, saying the doctor, the surgeon who's going to perform the surgery, saying a perek tehillim, ha'im zehu double life. That's not double life, that's broad life. And that's how he continues the rest of the letter and says, encourages his student with having, as we said, a hard time juggling. I'm frustrated. One second, why am I a base medrash Jew? Because at that time in the Daf Yomi in the Shir in the morning, I'm feeling like a Talmid Yeshiva, a Yeshiva Bacher. Or out there in the law firm, I'm feeling like I'm just like everyone else in the street. So if, Behemet, you lose your Torah values when you're out in the law firm, and you're living a contradiction, a double life, Behemet, if you start to stay in the hotel, and you think that that's your house, and you live there, you're in this world of dimion, of imagination, you have an identity crisis, you don't know where you live, that's a problem. But if, at the time, okay, you're there, that's your room that you're doing that activity, but not, for sure nothing, not only that it doesn't clash, but it connects in whatever way that your representative people see, this is how a person who is connected to Torah leads his life, that's broad life and not double life. So that's the words of Rav Hutner, the letter, this broad life, double life. Letter of Rav Hutner, a taste of Rav Hutner's writing. Be'ezat Hashem. next week we will. Okay, we're still finishing. I think it's 4 or 5 minutes. We're finishing 11:40. Next week, Bezat Hashem, we'll start Shabbos from the beginning. Dive straight into the Maamar itself. If anyone is interested, please don't be shy. Don't be shy. If anyone is interested, tomorrow in Yeshiva, I have a letter. If you want a copy of it, I'll give you a copy. A letter that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wrote, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, was a Talmud of Rav Hundner before he went to YU, before he became a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik. He was in Chaim Berlin, and there's a letter in Jewish Action. He said there's no biography on Rav Hundner, but there's this book, Between Berlin and Slobodka, and there's also a nice article a couple of years ago, when was this, 2002, there was an article in Jewish Action on Rav Hundner. If anyone wants a copy of the letter, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein remembers Rav Hundner, please let me know in Yeshiva tomorrow, and I'll get you a copy. Everyone have a good night, and Bezat Hashem, looking forward to the journey ahead. Have a good night.